Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here this morning with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. And how are you this fine day?
I'm doing just fine. It's actually, I was a little nervous about my ride in this morning, especially after seeing some smoke in the air, a little haze in the air yesterday afternoon, but it's relatively clear right now.
That smoke actually blew in an amazingly short amount of time yesterday.
Yeah. I was afraid it was going to be here to stay, but I actually, well, this is a little bit of news. I did look into where it's coming from and where it's going, and it looks like if the wind follows its intended course, it's going to mostly blow to the south of us. It's coming from, I believe it's coming from central Washington State, and it looks like the prediction from the National Weather Service is that it's going to blow right through Coeur d'Alene and Spokane, but hopefully, by and large, miss us. The current air quality index is 65 here, so that's moderate, but not great, but it doesn't look like it's... Right now, the prediction is that it's not going to get any worse
for us. Yeah, those fires are in eastern Washington. There's some big ones there, 3,900-acre Tacoma Creek, and then a little bit north of that, the Crown Creek is 14,000 acres. And those are both up in northeast Washington. So, yeah, that's, I believe that's where our smoke is coming from. And it, but so if it is moderate air quality today, so you're sensitive, you might want to stay indoors.
We're joined today by Jack Freeman, staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And as I was just saying to both of you yesterday, by my count, we're less than 6 weeks away from the next election, from November 4th. Can you believe it?
Yes, I can believe it. Well, it is now officially autumn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that arrived on, Tuesday, I think.
Yeah. So we are, so hopefully we'll be spending plenty of time in the next five Fridays talking about the issues that folks can expect to either see on their ballot or that the folks that they will be voting for can be expected to face in the upcoming term. But let me start with our headlines, and we'll start with some state news. Governor Little created a new task force on Monday to advance nuclear energy. He signed an executive order creating the Idaho Advanced Nuclear Energy Task Force while he was attending the Western Governors Association Energy Superabundance Conference at the Idaho National Laboratory in Idaho Falls. This will replace and modernize the LINE Commission, the Leadership in Idaho Nuclear Energy Commission, which his predecessor, former Governor Butch Otter, had created. But looking for more nuclear power in the western states and in the state of Idaho, Brad Little created this new task force. The lawsuit, we mentioned this last week, but there is a pending lawsuit challenging House Bill 93, the private education tax credit program, which was passed by the legislature this past session and signed into law. The lawsuit was filed last week, and now the Sandpoint Reader reports that that National Education Choice Groups have stepped in to, in quotes, step in to defend Idaho private school tax credit in court. The group is called The group is called the Partnership for Educational Choice. It's based out of Indianapolis, and it is a joint project of the Institute for Justice and Ed Choice. You can read about that in this week's Reader under Zach Hagedon's byline. Some county news. Ron Korn was in the news this week, but was cleared after an investigation by the state attorney general into events around the creation of the emergency moratorium on minor land divisions earlier this spring. That emergency moratorium is still in place, although it's actually the second such moratorium that's technically in place. The events that were investigated were around the really around the time of the first one that went into place, which was then superseded by the one currently in place. What appears to have happened is that right before the emergency moratorium was passed by the Board of County Commissioners, Commissioner Ron Korn spoke about the pending emergency moratorium to members of the public, and those communications eventually, not directly, but worked their way to a developer who filed, I think, seven minor land division, filed to create seven minor land divisions immediately before that emergency moratorium went into place. And I think that was what sparked the investigation. The communications that Korn relayed to members of the public were not marked as confidential, and nobody found, or it was not found, that Korn had intentionally tried to tip anyone off for profit or, I guess, or anything like that. So he's cleared, but there was an investigation into the events around that emergency moratorium. In related news, the County Planning Commission did vote unanimously on September 16th to approve proposed alterations to county code, which will replace that MLD, the minor land division process, with short subdivisions and long subdivisions. Short subdivisions being subdivisions into 10 or fewer new units, and long subdivisions being 11 or more new units. This is still pending and has to be passed by the county commission before it goes into effect, but that will be recommended unanimously by the county planning commission. Currently, the moratorium on minor land divisions is in effect and will be until next month. More planning news, more county planning news. Bonner County commissioners have approved the appointment of five members to serve on the county's zoning and planning commissions. For the planning commission, county commissioners approved Dave Bowman, Brendan Mooney, and Larry Madoski to serve three-year terms. For the zoning board, Michelle Johnson and Joe Mauch were appointed to serve three-year terms. These were at the suggestion of Ron Korn. These were each appointed individually and not as a group. Also, the county commission has a new chair and has altered its vice chair position. Brian Domke is now the chair of the Bonner County Commission. This is when the new term began, the three commissioners had entered into, I guess, I don't think it was a formal agreement, but had said that they would be rotating throughout the term who would be serving as chair, and now it's Brian Domke's turn. So
he's taking over for Asia Williams.
He's the new chair of the Bonner County Commission.
The stated goal there is to rotate it every 8 months, the chairmanship.
And here we are. We must be 8 months in. Mm-hmm. Let's see. How about the Long Bridge construction? The construction is now half complete. I spoke to Carolyn Lobsinger briefly yesterday about that construction project, and she thinks it's going to, she supposes, surmises that it's going to be completed actually ahead of schedule.
And Carolyn is the editor of the Bee.
Thank you. Yeah. They have also, by going to, at the beginning of each shift, they've gone to a manual or a personal, I guess, flagging system rather than the automatic that they had started with to allow cars through, or wrote chains of cars through. And this has greatly reduced the commute time for those of us on one side or the other of the bridge. I think it's down to about 10, maybe 20 minutes at the worst right now, as opposed to, I heard stories personally of like an hour and a half wait on the south side of the bridge to get north at the beginning of the construction project. But they have...
They were having some flagging issues. They were trying to use some automated flagging that apparently didn't work too well.
Yeah, not at the... yes, sometimes you need the personal touch. Let's get to city news. And this is where... This is part of Jack Freeman's beat. And this is why you're here, Jack. The... Sandpoint Council has approved, this is a little bit of old news, but Sandpoint City Council has approved ballot language for a $130 million bond measure on the November 4th ballot for the wastewater treatment plant. And now they have launched a website. It is, let's see, it's sandpoint-wwtp.org for information about that. And those of you who live in city limits inside of Sandpoint can find in your mailbox, I believe postcards have started to go out. And I'm not sure, Jack, maybe you can tell us what more we can expect from the city as far as kind of an informational campaign on the wastewater treatment plant. Do you know if they what their plans are to spread word to the people who to the electorate in advance of the election?
Yes, yeah, so the mailers are definitely a part of that. They talked about that. They're also hosting open houses, the first of which was last Wednesday, where only five people showed up, five members of the public, including or not including myself. So, talked with Mayor Jeremy Grimm after that a little bit, and he said that they would be kind of switching up their efforts a little bit, hoping to reach as many people as possible. So, there is another open house scheduled for Saturday, October 18th from 10 to 11 in City Council Chambers. That's when city staff will be there. Any questions that you have, you can go get answered. They have people who work at the wastewater treatment plant. To ask them questions about what their daily life is like as well, if you're interested in horror stories. That's as far as I know, but I do know that the city is going to be looking at a lot of available options to get the word out.
Jack, have you had the pleasure of visiting the current wastewater treatment plant?
I have not yet, but I have had the displeasure of standing by it when I went to the festival at Sandpoint, and it was not pleasant then, and I can't imagine it is pleasant inside either.
Do you actually do you know if the if part of the new wastewater treatment plant if they will be if they if trying to address the smell from the wastewater treatment plant is that part of the project?
I haven't heard them say that yet. I would assume that
it'd be a selling point. I think if they did, yeah,
yeah. I'd assume newer equipment and newer. You know, just a brand new plant, basically, which is what they're trying to do, would limit that smell, I'd hope. But I haven't heard them use that as a direct selling point yet.
Yeah. No, me neither. But maybe we'll find out about that. Actually, I know on these airwaves, I think we have tentatively scheduled a conversation about it on a, is it the last Wednesday in October that you have?
I
can look at that calendar. Yeah. I think it's on October 29th.
The 29th.
You'll be discussing that.
We are going to be also talking with candidates for Sandpoint City Council starting on October 15th, actually. And then October 22nd, we're going to try to talk to a couple different council candidates each. Mm-hmm. There's four candidates for three open seats. And we will be airing interviews with them on the 15th and the 22nd if people want to tune in for that.
The wastewater treatment plant, people who've been paying attention probably know this already, but just to go over the basics, it's $130 million bond measure, which is, as far as I know, the largest single expenditure that the voters of Sandpoint have ever been asked to approve. I think that's correct.
You're right there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody's corrected me on that point yet, so I think that's correct. It's. Do you know what? Do you have, an idea of how that breaks down, what the $130 million is, would be used for, should it be passed?
Completely renovating the wastewater treatment plant. Right now they're looking at phasing, so it's still in operation, but just phasing out basically everything. taking out a lot of the old concrete that's starting to rot and just rebuilding that, new machinery, new processes. Holly Ellis mentioned moving away from, you know, the chemicals that they use. And Holly Ellis, the public works director for Sandpoint, mentioned that. But they're really targeting an entire renovation of this plant that could keep them, basically bring everything up to code. Right now, a majority of the facility is older than I am standing here. So,
yeah.
It's older than Jack, too.
It is.
I don't know if it's older than me, so...
Yeah, it dates.
It actually is, because it dates back to the 1940s.
Part of it does. Yeah, right. You're right. So, but it's some of those pieces from the 40s are still in use. The bond measure. First, I guess here's a question: the bond measure, should it fail? Do you know what happens then if the bond measure does not go through?
Yes, so the bond measure not going through, the city's made it clear that they still need to proceed with this project. If you vote down the bond measure, it doesn't mean, oh, that, you know, goes away. It's an existing deficiency that they're going to, try to fix. Mm-hmm. And the way that they'll do that is by raising sewer rates. I believe the number that they have estimated is that sewer rates would raise around 600%. Over the next 5 years, if we were to try to directly cash fund this project. The sewer rates would only raise about 106% over the next 5 years if it passes. This is a revenue bond, so the revenue that they make off those rates is the way that they'll pay it back. Mm-hmm. But they're saying that the bond allows them to go out and get loans and grants and things like that, where... no bond means they can't borrow anything, and the city of Sandpoint residents, I think the mayor said they have around 3,100 hookups, sewer hookups, 2,500 of those are residential. Those people would be paying for it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if it passes, the city has the opportunity to go out and secure federal grants or state grants or other monies to help with this big infrastructure project, would theoretically bring that additional cost to the ratepayers down. Mm-hmm. Right now, if they could not secure that money, it's going to a little bit more than double, basically, what ratepayers pay for their sewer service right now.
Yeah.
So I think part of the city's argument is if you pass this, you know, we're going to go after other funding that we'll then be able to secure. But on the other hand, it's a pretty competitive environment out there for grants and, federal monies and state money. So there's no guarantee of that. But it's a lot better than six times, as they're saying. I don't know if I'd probably guess that that wouldn't immediately kick in. There'd probably be a lot of discussion, and I would be surprised if the city didn't come back another time and say, hey, give us another shot here with the bond. But that's speculation.
Yeah. The city can't, or you can't use, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the city can't technically use city resources to campaign for, directly campaign for the passage of this measure, but they can provide information.
That's correct.
And that's where, and therefore the website, sandpointwwtp.org, is up with information about what the city anticipates would happen and in the event of a yes or no. And the flyers have gone out, and otherwise it's open houses. Do you know if they're going to be doing any kind of door to door or, going to other public events or anything like that?
They might attend other public events.
Yeah.
I don't know any door to door or anything like that as of now. I think that they were, kind of go into this first open house, see what happens, if people are receptive, and they're going to be looking at everything because they do want to educate the public and get the word out about this bond initiative.
Yeah.
So of the five that were there, could you get the temperature of the room? Were they receptive to the idea?
I think they were all very positive mm-hmm. about the bond. I mean, you know, as positive you can be about that price point. A lot of them were just really concerned about being the only five people in the room.
Hmm.
And mm-hmm. That could be a good thing. It means that the public is educated and they say, wastewater treatment plant, oh, we've been talking about that for 5 years. We don't need to go to an open house. Or it could mean that people have already made up their minds against it. And
Or they're just not paying attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of different outcomes. And so I think the temperature of the room was very positive. They were very worried about what if the bond doesn't pass. Very worried about their rates and things like that. But overall, I mean, I believe that they were in support of the bond.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of a third option as far as the, if the bond doesn't pass, can the city choose to do nothing or wait and try to pass the bond again instead of moving forward with the plan?
I think they could. I don't think that's their plan right now.
Yeah.
I think if it fails, Jeremy Grimm said that he would go to the basically go to Washington and mm-hmm. say, what am I supposed to do? Or go to the state of Idaho, who doesn't have a ton of money to give, wouldn't have the money to give to him. But mm-hmm. Basically just say, I need a new plant. My voter shot it down. What am I supposed to do? And maybe see if he could get some federal earmarks, because right now Sandpoint has nothing from the federal government.
Yeah.
Only a $38 million loan from Idaho. So I think that would be the next step after that, and mm-hmm. they would see how it progresses. I think we'll see, but they have not shared a plan for that right now.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, to the question of whether the city can go out and advocate, the city itself can't use mm-hmm. taxpayer money to advocate for this. What has happened in the past, like for the Memorial Field local option tax that was passed mm-hmm. about 6 or 7 years ago, there was a citizen group that came up mm-hmm. and supported the local option tax and mm-hmm. went out and did the door-to-door. They mobilized, you know, kid groups and Festival at Sandpoint supporters and everybody that uses the field to go and put on a pretty substantial campaign to urge people to vote in favor. And in fact, people that actually passed with, I think, 73% approval in the vote for that. So, I mean, that would be one option for the city, is to mobilize some citizens to do that kind of work in support of it.
Yeah. And again, the election's right around the corner. So if that were going to happen, you'd expect it, if it's going to be effective, it should probably be underway right about now.
Yeah, I imagine a sewer plant's a little less sexy than, hey, let's fix up our football field. But it's part of trying to put a public proposal out there is to garner support.
Yeah, so awfully important. Failure of the plant is, I guess, you've reported, Jack, that... So the Idaho Conservation League found the facility violated its permit 6 times in 2004, which
24.
Was... Oh, sorry. Yeah. Thank you. 2024, last full year, which is up one more time than it was in 2023. The plant succeeded at maintaining 0 pounds of pollutant load over the plant's limit, which right now that's not having a noticeable impact on local water quality. But if that number goes up from 6 times in 2024 to more in 2025, that could start to impact the water quality of the Pend'Oreille River and folks downstream.
Yeah. I mean, what we'd be looking at is when you exceed that load over limit, it more than likely means partially treated or untreated sewage in the river.
Yeah,
That's the case in a couple of places in Idaho, whose pollutant load over limit is 56,000 pounds, and there's just raw sewage.
Whoa!
In the river, and So that's probably the worst case scenario. I think that's something that council has talked about, and why they decided to pursue the full $130 million bond was because if they went to the voters and got $80 million and fixed up 75% of it, and one of the old pipes that is corrosive and breaks, and there's raw sewage in the river, they would never have another chance to go back and ask for more money.
Right. Does the county have any role in funding this? County or right? We know the state has given a loan. The county or else other communities in the area, particularly those that would have an interest in preserving, you know, clean water. I'm thinking of Dover, right down the Pendre River from the sewer treatment plant. Do they? Does anybody else, you know, have a funding obligation here, or this is entirely on the city of Sandpoint?
I believe this is entirely on the city of Sandpoint, yes. They've talked about a couple of things, maybe trying to partner with cities to get their sewage, and maybe they could help pay for it. But right now, that's not in the cards currently.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's talk about what else the city council is up to. You have an, I think it was in this week's, or in a paper from earlier this week, city council voted to expand the downtown parking exempt zone to encompass more of the downtown area. So expanding over to kind of in past Pine, or I guess it already did go all the way to Lake, but then kind of into that South Sandpoint down towards the Long Bridge has been expanded in and is now part of the parking exempt area, which means, what does that mean, Jack, to be in the parking exempt area?
Yeah, so when you build or upgrade or want to change a zone, for instance, in the city of Sandpoint, there are laws around how much parking you need to provide. So I've talked to the mayor about this, and he used the Hive as an example. They are in the parking exempt zone. So when they renovated and did away with that, they didn't have to provide 300 parking spots close. They were exempt from that. And that's kind of the idea behind the parking exempt zone extension, is that more of these downtown businesses will be able to expand and renovate without being required to provide the on-street parking necessary. He said, you know, that there's a quote in there that he says, nobody goes downtown for parking, right? You don't want to walk downtown and see there's a parking lot and a parking garage. You want to see businesses, and that's what this is kind of meant to do, is to allow them that opportunity to renovate, change, bring new businesses in, and have them not required to provide the on-street parking that the code says.
Yeah, it's an interesting area to expand that parking exemption to. I mean, it's not really what you might consider the usual, you know, what people think of as downtown Sandpoint. It's kind of that area, kind of an in-between zone, a transitionary area in between coming off the Long Bridge or heading to the Long Bridge, and when you get to downtown, which you might say kind of the big historic buildings start at, by the time you get to about, or the historic commercial buildings anyway, start when you get to Pine and First. So this would be expanding further into that area, and could, I guess, change the character of that approach to and from downtown.
Yeah, I should mention, by the way, sorry, about the parking exempt zone. It's only, doesn't apply for residential. So if a big apartment complex was going to be put in there, for example, they would still have to, or they could pay a parking in lieu fee.
Right.
But they would still have to provide parking. It's for businesses.
So this would be, but a business could open a restaurant or something without providing parking now in that area, kind of along First.
Yeah, exactly.
Down and by Community
that's
Hall.
That's kind of the idea, is to just keep bringing more business downtown to that area, kind of renovate that space from a byway, like you're saying, that, you know, you just kind of pass through to get to downtown, because there are still businesses there. And there's space for businesses there that would allow them to, just bring more character to Sandpoint, more business in that area. That's the, kind of the idea from it that I've gathered.
Yeah. It was not a unanimous vote. I think Kyle Schreiber voted against. Do I read that correctly?
He voted no on first reading of the kind of a symbolic no, because he was against expanding the parking exempt zone, fearing that the parking would spill into those residential areas, because it is very close to residential areas. And he viewed that as a negative and didn't want to vote for it. But once he, once he saw that there wasn't enough support for taking that off, just kind of a symbolic no, letting his feelings be known, and then voted yes on the final ordinance.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's parking. I can't believe how time has flown. We will have to save our talk of the what's going on in both local school districts, the West Bonner County School District and the Lake Pendre School District. We'll have to wait. What else as far as City Hall business? What else is on? Anything coming to mind? I feel like I'm forgetting something important here that the City Council has recently done, but maybe I'm not.
Not besides the big parking decision that definitely created a big uproar. The ongoing discussion with Chafe.
There it is.
Open containers at City Beach.
That's what I was going to ask about.
When will that come up for consideration again?
That I'm not sure of. It was on, they talked about it, I think in late August, about a month ago.
Yeah.
But no decision has been made on that. It's been a lot of discussion so far. There was a lot of support for Chafe at the September 17th meeting. I think we'll see that brought up again. I think Chafe said they needed a decision by late November, mid to late November. So I anticipate before then,
And this is to allow Chafe to serve wine and beer at City Beach as a special event.
Well, not just Chafe,
It would affect other organizations as well. So.
The change would be to allow for events to serve alcohol at City Beach during a certain time period, like Chafe. Mm-hmm. Chafe is really the driving factor in this, but one of the reasons that council has been so pushed back on it a lot is that it's not just Chafe. It could be anybody. And there's a lot of consideration that goes into changing an ordinance to allow alcohol at City Beach, because that's a pretty sacred spot, I think, for a lot of people in the town, and it could have some unintended consequences. So they're thinking it over. I know that Chafe had a lot of supporters out there at that last city council meeting. It was packed. It was the most packed I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
An hour of public comment, primarily focusing on that. But we'll see kind of what that decision is down the line.
Yeah. I guess, as you just said, we will wait and see. Did you get a feeling from any of the council members which way they were leaning on it?
You know, there was a very quick discussion. And last time they discussed it at a meeting, they were overwhelmingly not in favor of having it at City Beach, just because of, the thought of having alcohol down there doesn't really align with how they see a family-friendly kind of thing. I think this was the support from the public, especially for Chafe, and Chafe saying that it's City Beach with alcohol, or, we don't know what we're going to do, might change things. I mean, even the superintendent of the Lake Pendre School District was at the September 17th meeting to support Chafe, and so maybe that changes things. I'm not sure, but when they recently talked about it, they were not in favor of it.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last week, because this is last week's news, but I guess what we discussed at the time was it does seem like you'd be able to have it go through a permit process and other in-groups can file, and the city could make a decision. It doesn't seem like it would be hard for them to make a decision on a case-by-case basis. It doesn't have to be a free-for-all, but I don't know. I guess we'll find out. We'll have to ask somebody closer to the council what the thinking is there.
Yeah, I think there's certain statutes and laws maybe that they're worried about. I haven't been able to dive into it 100%, but yeah, we'll see kind of what their overall decision is a little
bit later. Historically, going back a few years, the Lions Club used to have a beer festival, kind of part of Oktoberfest, I think, at City Beach in a big tent. So you might dig into the history there and see how that was permitted and you know why that is no longer permitted. I'd be interested. I'm not sure the details on that.
Yeah,
but I was there and I drank a beer.
Exactly. I was going to. I mean, it does seem. I mean, we know that you can't just go down to Farman Park and drink a beer at any time. But Farman Park at times is closed down, enclosed in a fence, and they're allowed to serve beer there. And it doesn't seem to cause any. It doesn't seem to cause any great problems for downtown. I guess I don't understand why City Beach couldn't.
If it's well regulated, right? And it's for just special occasions,
right?
Yeah, I think what they want to squash is the idea that people can pop a beer and walk around City Beach anytime.
Yeah.
So, we're out of time, I know, but mention a couple things. So there's going to be a motorcycle rally right here, right outside our door on Saturday, and it's called the Sandpoint Showdown. It's kind of an interesting first time ever event here. They're going to have people coming into town. So we should see a lot of motorcycle guys coming into town today. Are they actually closing traffic on First Avenue?
On Saturday, I think that they are.
They're going to shut down First Avenue just like they do for Lost in the 50s.
Yeah.
Okay. And then another interesting thing happening this weekend on Saturday is the unveiling 3.0 of the, as they're calling it, of the Carousel of Smiles at the fairgrounds. You can go there on Saturday and check out the carousel. Is like 90% complete. They're not offering rides on Saturday on it, but they're that close that people could actually get on the carousel and take a ride. Mm-hmm. So that's something to look for the weekend.
It is, yeah. What do you guys think? Will this be a new fixture of the fall? Will it be the new Lost in the 50s of the fall, this Sandpoint Showdown?
That's what they're trying to do with it.
Yeah that's I've talked to them, the people putting it on. They seem really excited about it, really passionate about the local community, and all the money that they get from this will go to Creations in the Cedar Street Bridge. So for a good cause, too.
Yeah. And they're going to, aside from just being able to check out the motorcycles, which I'm personally interested in doing, they are going to have a slow bike game.
Yes.
So it's a race, but it's the opposite of a regular race.
But
you try
can't
to go
say,
as slow as you can.
Their permits, they can't say race.
Yeah.
So it's not a race. It's a game. It's a skill competition
is
what
I
think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
As a bike rider myself, you know, you pull up to a stop sign and you see if you can get a complete stop accomplished without having to put your feet down. So that's one thing that motorcycle guys work at.
It'll be interesting to see what happens and to see who turns up, what kind of crowd is drawn to the Sandpoint Showdown. First ever. Jack Freeman, thanks so much for your time this morning. Anything else you want to mention? Anything upcoming in the Daily Bee you'd like to highlight or people should look for?
Yeah. Me and Chris were out at the Pondere Economic Summit yesterday. Got a lot of great information, a lot of complicated numbers that I need to dive into. But if you're interested in the economics of the region and kind of what the big players are saying, I'm going to have a pretty long piece about that, probably in next week's paper, so I get all my numbers right about that. And I think that'll be a great piece for anybody looking to stay up to date on everything.
Yeah, they laid out some interesting information along with talking about the regional economic forecast. They focused down on an economic impact study of the lake that's coming up from the Lakes Commission. So I'm sure you're going to be reporting on that.
Yes.
It's going to be very interesting.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. And Jack, thanks very much for your time. You can find Jack's work in the Daily Bee on newsstands 6 days a week here in the area. And right now we're going back to Otto's Eclectic Mix here on 88.5 KRFY. This has been North Idaho News of the Week on Panhandle Community Radio.